Track 7, Accused Innocent. On the last track, we discussed the influence of the feminist movement views of rape and sexual abuse, and related these issues to an assessment of your personal value system. On this track, we will examine the effect of false memory generation on innocent so-called perpetrators and the obvious resulting ethical dilemmas. One of the most tangible victims of false memory generation when it involves sexual abuse are those fathers, mothers, relatives, teachers, etc., who are the accused. Many times, these are family members of the victims and close friends. Generally, there is a gradual process involved when clients come to the conclusion, whether accurate or inaccurate, that their parents are guilty of incest or abuse. According to Bartlett, unfortunately, many of these conclusions come from therapists that believe in repressed memories and hypnosis. These steps start with, number one, the therapist suggesting sexual abuse. Number two, through hypnotism, relaxation, or guided visualizations, repressed memories are found. Number three, the client then goes through a repertoire of suspects before reaching the final conclusion that usually a parent is the abuser. Number four, the client confronts the parent who denies any such action. And finally, five, the client disowns his or her parent or perhaps both parents. Obviously, the most ethical implication lies on the pivotal point of the therapist methods. Unfortunately, the use of such vulnerable state-inducing exercises as hypnotism has been proven to increase the risk of false memory generation. Let's examine each of these five steps in the process of incest accusation in detail. Number one, the therapist suggests sexual abuse. Sometimes within the first session, the therapist suggests that the client might be a candidate for childhood sexual abuse. Could this quick diagnosis be an indication of a preconceived notion within the therapist? Recall the last track where we talked about feminist movements and sexist attitudes. If so, this predetermined concept might have excessively influenced the therapist analysis, and therein lies the ethical dilemma. By immediately expecting a sexual abuse client, the therapist can find many symptoms that relate and support his or her theory. However, these symptoms can commonly be the result of another source. Without proper evidence, the sudden conclusion of sexual abuse might be a false one, as we've talked about through this whole CD. As a result, the client, taking the therapist as an infallible authority figure, immediately considers that he or she is most likely the survivor of sexual abuse. Once the idea of sexual abuse becomes prevalent in the therapist and the client's minds, any inclination that supports other ideas only possibly increases your client's confusion. Second, after sexual abuse is suggested through the use of perhaps hypnosis, relaxation, or guided visualization, the therapist may start to recover the memories. As you have heard on the previous tracks, without the proper training, the therapist can easily influence the client who is already in a vulnerable state. According to Bartlett, even those therapists significantly trained in the areas of hypnotism cannot retrieve memories thoroughly and with total accuracy. As was discussed previously, Bartlett feels hypnotism is not a proper method in enhancing past memories, but only in inventing them. Of course, this point is open for debate. This is especially true when the client has been inundating themselves with thoughts of sexual abuse and ways to discover if there truly was any such abuse in their childhood. If such is the case and hypnosis is used to recover memories, the therapist has a more likely chance of fabricating memories than of retrieving true memories of sexual abuse or rape. This leads to the unfortunate result found in the next stage, creating a list of suspects. After the therapist suggesting sexual abuse, perhaps enhancing these memories with hypnotism or guided visualization, third, the list of suspects is created, usually predominantly by the client. However, sometimes the therapist may be involved. This also violates the section of the American Association of Marriage and Family Therapists Codes of Ethics, which states, marriage and family therapist, because of their ability to influence and alter the lives of others, exercises special care when making public their professional recommendations and opinions through testimony or other public statements. Without sufficient consultation over the client's family status, any advice given could result in erroneous conclusions. This list can range from close friends of the family to babysitters, teachers, coaches, and finally, family members themselves. It is usually not until a few of these candidates have been ruled out that the client begins to consider his or her parents as a suspect of the abuse. Once this point has been reached, the fourth step, after therapist suggestions, hypnosis-type techniques, and suspect listing, is the confrontation by the client of the suspect, usually the parents. The client's allegations are almost always denied by the parents. Because the client has already become unchangeably certain of the abuse, the client cannot be dissuaded by the family member, especially, as mentioned on a previous track, the client has a tendency towards codependency and people-pleasing the authority figure of the therapist. These well-implanted ideas have become the client's new reality. When a client goes through such a tumultuous change in their world around them, any person who tries to challenge this new idea is viewed with mistrust. The client then separates themselves from any person that would contradict their new reality. The ramifications of this are obvious. Not only has the client possibly accused their parents of false allegations, but at the same time also has cut off a valuable lifeline to the pursuit of full recovery. Without the support of loved ones and friends that have known the client for most of their lives, the possibility for recovery becomes even more distant. As a result, the client becomes extremely dependent on, you guessed it, the therapist alone, and this makes the idea of termination even more difficult. One way of looking at this scenario is support groups that recognize the efficacy of repressed memories, fuel the client's need for dependency, and weakens their ability to live life fully without the prop of therapy. As you know, termination is a necessary step in the full recovery of a client. Without this stage, the client cannot live healthy, happy, and most importantly, independent lives. On this track, we discuss the effects of false memory generation on the innocent so-called perpetrators. Question 7. What is the 5-step process that leads the client to accusing, perhaps, the innocent? So, quite an ethical bind or dilemma is the whole picture of repressed memory recovery and sexual abuse. Here is a summation of the pros and cons regarding the ethical tightrope you must walk. Dilemma number 1. In track 1, we discussed how your client may come to you inundated with a plethora of self-help, sexual abuse, predisposition via books, TV shows, and so on. If you don't support them in their idea of sexual abuse, you jeopardize the therapeutic alliance. Dilemma number 2. On the second track, we discuss the ethical dilemma of the temptation to abandon a client if you discover that you have been manipulated, perhaps by a custody-seeking parent, to create a false diagnosis of sexual abuse. How do you continue therapy with a mother who has intentionally duped you, so to speak, regarding falsified sexual abuse by her ex-husband without violating the ethical boundary of client abandonment? Dilemma number 3. On the third track, the strength of scientific evidence for repression depends on exactly how you define the term of repression. When defined narrowly as intentional suppression of an experience, there is little reason to doubt that repression exists. But when we talk about a repression mechanism that operates unconsciously and defensively to block our traumatic experiences, there is no scientific evidence to substantiate the efficacy of repressed memories. Dilemma number 4. The fourth track almost totally invalidates the claim of sexual abuse you would receive by any of your codependent clients. The ethical dilemma is the codependent client may be such a people pleaser that any hint you may give of sexual abuse could be tantamount to an unethical practice for implementing false sexual memories. On the other hand, codependent clients need support and reassurance. Dilemma number 5. Track 5 requests you to examine your New Age thoughts regarding intuition, imagination, and hearsay. The ethical dilemma here is if your personal belief system tells you to trust your intuition and you pass this along, even so subtly, to your possibly sexually abused client, you may be enhancing or creating or encouraging false memories. To the contrary, exploration of feelings is a basic therapy tenet. Dilemma number 6. On track 6, you explored your personal value system regarding feminism and your marital status, employment status, and possible sexist values. If you have strong beliefs regarding male dominance, you may be facing strong ethical challenges regarding the client whose abuser is a male. Dilemma number 7. And finally, on track 7, therapist suggestions, hypnosis or guided visualization, client confrontation, and client disowning, usually his parents, are the steps that go into blaming perhaps the innocent. On this track, the devastating result of family upheaval are outlined, and the ethical weight and magnitude of these issues is made blatantly clear. It is hoped this CD and course has provided you with some food for thought regarding ethical issues. We appreciate that you've chosen the Healthcare Training Institute at homestudycredit.com as a means for receiving your continuing education courses. Other courses that the Institute offers are Setting Clear and Ethical Boundaries with Clients, You Made Me Hit You, Interventions with Male Batterers, Interventions for Anxiety Disorders with Children and Adults, Sad is How I Am, Treating Dysthymia, and many more. Thank you, and I look forward to talking to you on another home study course.